can't have our leaders cop out now. Saeed Purizza, Glasgow.
Meet Perkinra, an all-Iranian drug for treating rheumatoid arthritis in children. The drug is a new formulation of Anakinra, or what is internationally known as Kineret, which is a product of a Swedish pharmaceutical company. Iranian biotech firm Persisgen says Perkinra is the first Iranian biopharmaceutical medication that is developed from A to Z inside Iran.
The medicine had been tested on patients under 16 who needed intensive care in Tehran's Imam Hussein Hospital, where hospitalization rates had reduced by 65% after the clinical trial. He said half of the patients who avoided the medicine during the trial had died, while those taking the medication had seen their oxygen levels improve after 48 hours.
In rheumatoid arthritis, or shortly RA, the immune system attacks healthy cells in the body by mistake, causing painful swelling in the joints. In Iran, around 500,000 people are suffering from the condition. They get weekly injections of Kineret, the Swedish drug, which is highly unavailable in Iran due to U.S. sanctions that prevent the country from paying for foreign medicine.
By producing this medicine, Persisgen managed to break the monopoly of Sweden on the production of RA drugs. Plus, the import of the drug takes a complicated procedure given the fact that foreign companies shy away from selling medicine to Iran due to fear from U.S. punishment. And even if they want to, Iran cannot pay them because of the banking sanctions.
Persisgen says it has so far manufactured 60,000 syringes of Perkinra for distribution in the Iranian market. At the same time, it has initiated exports to three countries of Ukraine, Turkey, and the Philippines. Prompted by years of U.S. sanctions that have blocked Iranians' access to life-saving medicine, Iran has been trying to gain self-sufficiency in the pharmaceutical sector. And this biotech firm says Perkinra is a byproduct of that pressure, which will now obviate the need for Iranian RA patients to desperately wait for foreign medicine. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Iran nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, got into trouble in May 2018 when then-US President Donald Trump unilaterally abandoned it and reimposed sanctions on the Islamic Republic. In January this year, when Trump's successor, Joe Biden, took office, he expressed willingness to return to the deal. Accordingly, Tehran and the remaining JCPOA parties, namely China, Russia, the UK, France, and Germany, began talks in Vienna in April. Six rounds of negotiations were held before they were suspended in June due to Washington's failure to remove the sanctions. Now, Iran's foreign minister has questioned that whether the US is serious to return to the JCPOA.
If there is a serious will in Washington to return to the deal, there is no need for all these negotiations at all. It is enough for the US president to issue an executive order tomorrow and announce that the US is joining the pact from the point where the Trump administration left.
On Friday, the US imposed fresh sanctions targeting Iran's drone program, a move drawing a reaction from the Iranian foreign ministry.
The imposition of new sanctions reflect the completely contradictory behavior of the White House, an administration that talks about returning to the JCPOA and is following the same methods of the Trump administration by imposing sanctions, is sending a message that it is not trustworthy at all.
Iran's drone program, along with its missile program, is among issues that the US and some of its Western and regional allies say must be included in talks over the JCPOA. That's what Iran has time and again rejected, saying its defense program remains non-negotiable.
Iran's defense capability is a matter of national decision that is intertwined with the country's national interests and security. Therefore, no country has the right to speak or comment on this issue.
Iran says it is interested in continuing the Vienna talks, but the negotiations must be result-oriented and lead to the removal of the sanctions in a verifiable manner. However, The White House persists in exerting pressure on Iran to speed up the talks, a policy that Russia believes is unhelpful.
Pressure on Iran to speed up the experience shows that it doesn't help. Doesn't help. Either you do it bilaterally or in the commission, or you do it through the IAEA.
Top officials within the Biden administration, including Secretary of State Antony Blinken, have admitted that the so-called maximum pressure campaign launched by Trump against Iran has failed. However, despite the admission, the White House seems to be still following up that proven failed policy.
Tens of thousands of Palestinians are lining up in front of the Chambers of Commerce across the Gaza Strip, hoping to get permits from the Israeli side to walk in the occupied lands and the West Bank. This comes after Rahmer saying that more permits are set to be issued for the first time following the recent escalation on the Gaza Strip.
It is hard to believe that Israel is going to issue permits for us to work in occupied lands and the West Bank. Since 2019, no permission has been issued by Israel. We have been jobless since then. Now Israel says it is going to issue new permits, but it has set hard conditions for us.
In light of the deteriorating economic situation in Gaza with the high unemployment rate of more than 53% and poverty reaching about 70%, Palestinians hope to obtain the permits to find work opportunities in the occupied lands and the West Bank that will help them to reduce their poverty. Since Israel withdrew from the Gaza Strip in 2005, it no longer allowed Gaza workers to obtain permits that would enable them to work, as tens of thousands of workers used to go out daily to work in the occupied lands as their only source of income in the fields of construction, agriculture, industry, and tourism.
The Israeli blockade on the Gaza Strip has led to an unprecedented level of unemployment in the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, about 70% of Palestinian families suffer from lack of food, and this is all due to the collapse of Gaza's economy.
The Chamber of Commerce says Israel should be held accountable for the growing rate of unemployment in Gaza. The daily hardships endured by Palestinians, along with the crippling blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip, led thousands to search for work opportunities outside Gaza. Palestinians called on the international community to end the siege and develop solutions to reduce high rates of poverty and unemployment. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
A two-day meeting of the G20 leaders of the world's 20 major economies wrapped up in the Italian capital on Sunday. A final communique issued at the end of the summit contains a weak compromise commitment on climate change and COVID-19 vaccine sharing, which has drawn wide criticism from some politicians, activists, and public. Leaders have agreed that nations must take meaningful action to keep the world from warming by no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels without setting any specific criteria to achieve net zero carbon emissions by 2050. Furthermore, although the communique does include plans to end overseas investment in coal this year, no specific actions to limit domestic coal use has been set out.
The latest United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report shows that we must carry out immediate, rapid, and sizable cuts to emissions to avoid disastrous consequences. So some of us are asking why we moved our goalpost from 2 degrees to 1.5 degrees. Why? Because science says so.
The G20 leaders have also agreed to establish a 15% global minimum corporate tax for the biggest multinationals in a bid to end the damaging race to the bottom on corporate taxation. However, no developing or poor nations will benefit from this ruling, as multinationals have their bases in wealthy countries and large companies will continue to generate revenue in poorer parts of the world, a long-debated web tax on digital giants such as Apple, Google, and Facebook has been scrapped.
Lately, the G20 summit seems to have lost its relevance, with leaders of several countries, including China, Russia, Japan, and Mexico, not attending the meeting. During anti-G20 rallies, protesters have slammed the summit and the statements that follow, saying that such initiatives are disconnected from reality and people's needs.
The G20 summit talks weekend was accompanied by large protests. Three anti-G20 demonstrations attended by young students, left-leaning groups, climate change activists, and trade unions were held in Rome between Friday and Saturday.
Il G20 è fatto da persone.
The G20 is made up of politicians who want the finance to take over politics, politicians who want our country in the hands of Brussels, Frankfurt, and the Silicon Valley.
Many fear that the G20 leaders' mild pledges on climate neutrality and coal financing could result in lost momentum ahead of an upcoming crucial COP26 climate summit in Glasgow. Max Civili, Rome.
Her name means hope in Arabic. 3 years ago, a photograph of Amal Hussein showing her skin and bones sparked shock and anger across the globe. A week later, she starved to death and became a striking symbol of the catastrophic situation in the war-torn country.
The number of malnourished cases is increasing daily compared to previous years during the brutal aggression against our country. We expect that the number of malnourished children exceeds 1 million across the country. Amal Hussein was only an example of the suffering of millions of Yemeni children. What is the fault of Amal and these children who suffer from the consequences of the blockade imposed by Saudi Arabia? It is the children who pay the price, unfortunately, under the coverage of the United Nations.
Amal was one of nearly 2 million children suffering from severe malnutrition in Yemen. With 3 years having passed since her death, the situation has not got any better due to the continuing food crisis in the country and the lack of medicines for children.
We receive patients from all governorates, including very bad cases that suffer from extreme poverty and are unable to provide the most basic needs of children with their medicine or food. The organizations say they provide everything, but what they receive is very little compared to what they need. And it is difficult to get medicines for malnutrition. Some parents get forced to leave the center before the treatment ends, and as a result, a large number of children die, as what happened to the child Amal Hussein back in 2018.
The years-long Saudi war and siege on Yemen have killed tens of thousands of civilians, including women and the children, and pushed the country to the brink of famine. The United Nations describes Yemen as the world's worst humanitarian crisis, where more than 20 million people rely on aid.
Amal has died, but the hope is still alive with millions of Yemeni children who continue to suffer from the consequences of the ongoing brutal Saudi war. However, the international community, including the United Nations, has not taken any action to put an end to the humanitarian crisis in the war-ravaged country. Abdulatif Roshali, Sana.
Russian officials reported 40,993 new infections on Sunday, exceeding the previous record of 40,251 reported early. They also added that 1,160 people died of the virus on Saturday, three fewer than the record set on Friday. Russia's COVID-19 death count has raised to 237,380, by far the largest in Europe. Meanwhile, over 8.47 million infections have been recorded in the country of 146 million.
Most enterprises and non-essential services in Russia are closed till November the 7th, but the possibility to extend the quarantine is very likely, as it has already happened before.
In Moscow, severe restrictions have begun earlier. Almost the entire service sector is on lockdown. Schools and universities' classes have been closed as well. To cope with infection, President Putin ordered a non-working period from October 30th to November the 7th, when most state agencies and private businesses are to suspend operations.
I just don't understand what's going on. We have a reliable, effective vaccine, and there are only two ways to get through this period: get sick or get vaccinated.
Despite the ever-increasing growth of infections and endless semi-restrictions, some Russians are in no hurry to get vaccinated. Others consider them to be mandatory.
My opinion is very simple. Vaccination is a responsibility act. It should not be a matter of option. It should be mandatory. It's the only way people will be able to beat COVID. As simple as that.
This was not a mandatory part of the program, and people were not forced to do it. Everything could be much better. But when we understand that conditions are being set for us, if you want to work, go get vaccinated. If you want to go to the theater, get vaccinated. If you want to eat in a restaurant, here is a QR code. Get vaccinated. This is already a cattle whip method.
About 51 million Russians, just over a third of the country's people, were fully vaccinated as of Saturday.
They may say anything they want. There are many cases of how severely vaccinated people get sick and die. Why is nobody talking about this?
Observers say one of numerous factors of cited distrust in the authorities' care can be explained by the adopted budget of the new State Duma, where in the next 2 years a reduction in health care costs by 300 billion rubles provided. It seems that plans to treat Russians with vaccines against the background of medicine optimization no longer leave illusions for people. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
امروز برای ملت ایران.
Well, dear listeners, here we interrupt the normal course of our program to have the live coverage of the speech of the Chief Commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Major General Hossein Salami, during the ceremony of November 4th anniversary, which is actually the 42nd anniversary of the takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, or the Den of Espionage. Let's take a listen.
1979. At that time, when the U.S. was on the climax of political, economic, and military power, and the Iranian nation was at the starting point of a glorious revolution, another revolution took place within that glorious revolution that was led by the late Imam, who truly spread the teachings of Islam. This courage and steadfastness in those days is one of the most astonishing historical events, both for humanity and also the dear nation of Iran. We had engaged in a confrontation with the U.S. at a time when one could witness the interventionist and aggressive and occupational approaches by the U.S., acts of coups and support for dictators. These were the acts committed by the U.S. at that time, and the world was suffering from all these at that time. If you take a look at the list of wars caused by the U.S. in the past 100 years, and of course, I have the list right now. You see that more than 40 major conflicts in 40 parts of the world have been caused by the policies of the United States in the world. Speaking of European states, African countries, South American states, the Middle East, the Far East, Russia, you see that the U.S. has caused conflicts in all these areas that brought about more than 8 million people who were killed due to U.S. direct conflicts, regardless of proxy wars that were also politically supported by the U.S. More than 200 acts of interventionism in the domestic affairs of countries at the level of a coup d'etat and economic sanctions, military conflicts, internal seditions, all these were the outcomes of policies pursued by a superpower that merely intended to expand its military might and in this way pursue political goals. There are 750 U.S. military bases throughout the world. And every one of them have tried to actually bring about political domination for the U.S. The U.S. has been a factory for producing dictators throughout the world, in the Philippines, in Sudan, and also Agostino Pinochet in Chile, and the pharaohs of Egypt, the Shah of Iran, the ruling kings in many Arab states, in Latin America, the world geography is filled with dictators that were born from the U.S.-style democracy, one that has the Statue of Liberty, has the highest level of actually suppression and also suppressing the freedom seekers and actually producing the torture machines and sending these machines to all the dictators and also teaching torture techniques in order to actually suppress the freedom seekers and justice seekers of the world. The U.S. is the only power that has used nuclear weapons twice against one single nation in 1945, on 6th and 8th of August in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And in less than a blink of an eye, hundreds of thousands of people were turned into ashes. Through the coup in Iran on 28th of Mordad, Iranian calendar, the United States supported the monarchical regime in Iran and also constitutionalism and freedom seeking were deleted from the geography of Iran. And the Shah of Iran was nicknamed as the gendarme of the region. That was a nickname given to the Shah by the U.S. And the U.S. considered Iran as one of the pillars of the U.S. strategy for its domination in West Asia. And that was the dual foundation policy. It was called the dual foundation policy. And the U.S. Eliminated the cultural identity of the Iranian nation and targeted the glory of Iran and Islam. the nation's material and spiritual wealth, and also the wealth of other Muslim nations were plundered by the U.S. And the global hegemony just seeks to plunder the wealth and identity and culture of other nations, including Muslim nations. In the political logic of the U.S., whoever rules the Muslim world can actually rule the whole world. So, and this country had turned into a launching pad for the United States to become a world power. This was the political scheme and map considered for Iran in the U.S. political geography. A dependent Iran, a poor Iran, lacking freedom, without popular rule. And as a representative of the U.S., the 51st state of the, enacted as the 51st state of the U.S., and Iran's revolution disrupted such a political atmosphere, such a political domination, an atmosphere of political domination. And it was actually the revolution managed to overcome the U.S. policy. And the U.S. had made efforts in order to dominate half of the world geography, and such a scheme was disrupted by the revolution. This was the starting point, as the late Imam said. This was the starting point for a major jihad by the Iranian nation in order to once again restore the glory and grandeur of this nation through a revolution. That was a major blow to the U.S., and that caused panic amongst Americans. The U.S. thought that the political logic of revolution will actually in facing this revolution, the U.S. mobilized all its forces, and the U.S. increased its acts of interventions and imposed an 8-year war. And this war was politically managed by the U.S., and that was the outcome of an organized planning by the U.S. against the Iranian nation. This country managed to crush the policies of U.S. presidents and deprive Carter of being reelected after the U.S. Espionage den was took over by the students following the path of Imam 42 years ago. This was a move by Muslim students, and that was the starting point for the downfall of the U.S. by Muslims throughout the world. In order to free the hostages who were the American spy ambassadors in this land, ambassadors for espionage, and the U.S. Had an act of interference using Delta Force and faced divine wrath in the deserts of Tabas, and as the late Imam said, descend a storm like similar to the Ababil. The storm crushed the U.S. forces, and that led to the military failure of the U.S. And that brought about depression in the political scene of the U.S. And that means that the American statesmen were depressed. That led to economic sanctions. After Carter, Reagan had the policy of active confrontation, choose the policy of active confrontation with the Islamic Republic of Iran. This means that the U.S. directly supported Saddam in the course of the war and provided Saddam with intelligence and arms, and all the satanic forces formed a coalition that was organized by the U.S. against the Iranian nation. But that also failed, even though in the last years of the war there was a military intervention to the benefit of Iraq in the Persian Gulf, but the navies of the army and IRGC dealt major blows to the U.S. Navy, and that was the final shot, even though the U.S. downed an Airbus passenger plane with 290 passengers, and that was downed by the U.S. Winston warship. But all these brought about new motivations for the Iranian nation in order to take more steps forward since the victory of the revolution in Iran. If you take a look at the U.S. Collection of wars against the revolution, the Islamic establishment, and the Iranian nation, you don't see. If you take a look at such a collection, you will see that the Iranian nation has always emerged victorious. The Americans have become accustomed to being defeated by the Iranian nation, and they have not yet learned a lesson. After Reagan, we come across Bush, who spoke of the New World Order in order to counter the order that was designed by the revolution, and he failed as well. Then we had Ayatollah Imam Khamenei, who became the leader as a wise successor to the late Imam Khomeini, and this path continued. Then Clinton came to power. You see how the Iranian nation, through have actually managed to resist in the face of every one of these U.S. presidents. And in fact, the Iranian nation managed to overcome them and take part in their funeral, in the president's, U.S. president's funeral processions. You see that there were sanctions imposed. Iran became the focal point of sanctions. The sanctions failed as well. Then was the next U.S. President Bush, and he described the Islamic Republic of Iran as an axis of evil. And all U.S. presidents just focused on containing the Islamic Republic of Iran. That was the focal point of their policies. And they made efforts through laying military siege or imposing economic pressures or through psychological warfare or media warfare. They all tried to actually divert the Iranian nation from pursuing its path. And you see that God Almighty granted his blessings to this nation, and the Iranian nation has always emerged victorious due to its perseverance and steadfastness by supporting the leadership. The U.S. power started to decline. On the other hand, you see revolutionary passion and increase in power, and also powerful deterrence that emerged for our system, our Islamic establishment. And such a might increased on a daily basis. There were other adventures. Obama put on his agenda imposing more sanctions on Iran with regard to the nuclear issue. In parallel with this, Iran became stronger. Our leader, who is leading this movement today at the global level and is guiding this nation through his wisdom and prudence and through the influence of his words, he has managed to expand this revolution throughout the world and has put to question and challenge the Western ideology through his logic, Islamic logic, and has played an inspiring role with respect to the restoration of the spirit of jihad in Muslim lands. And Muslim youths, in response to these enlightening remarks by the Muslim Imam, the Imam of Muslims, in order to overcome the oppressors, the youths became armed, and there were power structures from the Eastern Mediterranean, Lebanon, in Iraq, in Yemen, in Afghanistan. There were structures of power taking shape, and the revolution was expanded. And the leader remained as the pillar of this revolution, and this created a vast front in the face of the global hegemony. And the elimination of the Zionist regime has become a nightmare for Israel and the Americans. So, in order to, this was the approach pursued, and compare this. Those leaders who lack wisdom and reasoning, and they do not have the political wisdom, and they just act based on materialistic power calculations, see that they have been surrendered to the U.S. power, and you see that the U.S. military power has declined, and you see the U.S. political decline as well. The Americans fought for something that they never achieved. And as they got closer to the Islamic world, they became more distanced from the world of Islam. Take a look at those unwise leaders who just spread hatred, and they have put the U.S. economy on the brink of bankruptcy, and they actually caused a decline in U.S. political influence. And those leaders have no morality and do not follow the path of spirituality. And such a trend continues. But our leader managed to close the hands of the enemies and deprive the enemies of power to react, and actually offered initiatives to those defending the world of Islam. The outcome of such guidelines by the Imam of Muslims was a courageous commander who was a flag bearer, like the Abul Fazl of, he acted like the Abul Fazl of the revolution. He was a major power in the face of the enemy. The enemy knew him very well. His might and power of prudence was seen in global competitions, and the outcome was Haj Qasem Soleimani, who was like a shining sun, and his martyrdom influenced cultures and changed the cultures and spirits. And there are many such anonymous and unknown individuals on this planet who are waiting to join that great martyr. At the same time, the country had to make progress despite the sanctions, despite the siege, despite assassinations, the assassination of our scientists. In these streets, but Iran continued to make progress, generated more power, and managed to overcome the sanctions. And this is the grandeur of the Iranian nation. And I, as a soldier, as a servant of this great nation, I kiss your hands, I kiss your foreheads, and I'm proud of you. God's salutations and greetings be upon you, that you support the Imam of the Muslims and this scene of conflict with world powers, and this crushed all the wishes of the enemies. Your actions, your patience, and your steadfastness crushed the wishes and the dreams of the enemies. But this path continued. As I said, the enemy's power declined gradually. As the American general said, General Allen, the head of the U.S. Brookings Institute, he said that American forces, in order to achieve, they are not there in order to achieve victory in Middle East and West Asia. They are there in order to just disrupt the situation there. You have to be very careful about this. That's what the U.S. is seeking to do. You don't see the U.S. in this region influencing the policies here, because those depending on the U.S. in this region, their dependence on U.S. power, such a dependence has been eliminated. Because the Americans cannot, they want to support the Zionist regime, but they cannot support the Zionist regime anymore. And they are facing two evils. To remain, they cannot remain. If they want to remain, they cannot remain. They will be harmed. And if they exit and withdraw, that means a defeat for them. And you see, the U.S. is in a debt, is facing a deadlock. That's been the outcome of policies by U.S. statesmen, and they lack wisdom. And they are just spending power without any achievement. And today, you can see this adventure going on. You can see this quite clearly today. The Americans used all their tactics in order to surrender the nation. They used external war, Takfiri terrorism, assassinations, and the most prominent anti-terror commander, Haj Qasem Soleimani, was assassinated. He went through the desert areas, mountainous regions, and he pursued the enemies of Islam and Muslim nations. And he was the global hero of combating terrorism. He was a flag bearer of jihad. He was a unique person. He was cowardly assassinated. He was unarmed. He was unarmed and he was cowardly assassinated by Americans using modern aircraft. He and his companions, martyr Abu al-Muhandis and his other dear companions, they were all martyred. Actually, the Americans supported the terrorists, and the Americans also fought against those who countered the terrorists. But the Americans just portrayed themselves as elements combating terrorism. That's a property of the U.S. The U.S. speaks of democracy but installs dictators. The U.S. speaks of human rights, but you see all the horrific prisons belonging to the U.S. The U.S. speaks of freedom, but you see all the freedom seekers of the world are being pursued by the U.S. The U.S. speaks of combating terrorism, but the U.S. assassinates our commander. You see, these are all paradoxical actions. The U.S. speaks of security, but the U.S. has caused insecurity throughout the world. The U.S. speaks of combating and fighting WMDs, but the U.S. has thousands of nuclear warheads and has also used such weapons and is supporting regimes that have that are in position of nuclear weapons. Be careful about these points. The U.S. speaks of people, but you see that the U.S. has blocked the transfer of foodstuffs and medicine to many countries. Iran is an exception. Iran has prospered in the course of sanctions. with the grace of God, those who have imposed sanctions upon us, they are facing economic crises themselves. That's a divine promise. And the U.S. Has failed in confronting this establishment, and this our homeland is a banned area for the U.S. And the U.S. must not see this, must not look at this land, must not see the people. This is a banned area, a forbidden zone. And this has all been realized due to your support and your patience and steadfastness. And in the course of the economic war, and this is a clear manifestation of resistance. We are proud of this. Fortunately, today we are powerful. Fortunately, we are powerful today. We have the power of self-reliance, a superior power. The main power is your faith, and also the glory of our defensive might, the courageous personnel of the armed forces, and the people who support such forces. We have experienced many direct confrontations with aggressive U.S. forces, and there's no time to tell all of these, but I have a recommendation to the Iranian nation as a soldier. As long as the Iranian nation is inspired by bitter events of the advent of Islam, and as long as they support their imam, I assure you that no one can harm this land. This has also been mentioned by the late Imam. But we are determined.